You're listening to the Locked On Nuggets podcast, your daily podcast on the Denver Nuggets. Now, here is your host from DenverStiffs.com, Adam Mottis.
What is up, everybody, and welcome to the Locked On Nuggets podcast, part of the Locked On Network. I'm not your host, Adam Mottis. Adam is away from the pod this week, so I am Brendan Vogt of DenverStiffs.com, filling in for the big man. And I didn't want to do this by myself, so I hit up the only guy I really would.
Because I'm so happy that I'm your primary because there is nobody else.
My old partner in crime, TJ McBride of Mile High Sports. TJ, what's up, man?
Not too much, man. We do always find a way to podcast together at random times like this. It's pretty actually incredible how often we find a way to podcast together.
We never really stopped working together.
No, we never did. That's not the most fun part of our, you know, randomness throughout this process. But yeah.
There have been no Locked On Nuggets podcast this week, so TJ and I will share our notes from the Houston game, from the Miami game, then hit on some quick hitter sort of general stuff. And yeah, you know, I should have some more guests on for the Thursday and Friday episodes as well. Of course, we'll all be in the arena tomorrow night. But for this one, Houston, Miami, injury updates, all that good stuff. TJ, let's start that Houston game, man.
Yes.
That went probably exactly how I thought it was going to go.
With a little extra deflation sprinkled on top, I thought, because overall, the Nuggets battled for all 48 minutes, and it just didn't matter. Right. And that was probably the part that really sucked the most, is that it was close. Like, Denver was within striking distance for most of the game. They sustained James Harden getting hot and hitting a few threes in a quarter and their big runs that they go on, and they were still within a puncher's chance of that game. But, man, things went downhill quickly, it felt like.
125 to 113. You're right. It did. Things sent. They felt futile on Denver's end. It did sort of seem like, all right, no matter what they try here, it's just not going to work out. But you're right that they didn't roll over, and that game was within sort of, you know, a punch's distance in the fourth quarter, midway through the fourth quarter. But let's back all the way up to the beginning. What did you think of Denver's strategy, frankly, on Houston, and what? That being, they decided, look, we're just going to trap Harden as the ball handler. If he calls for a pick, a lot of pressure, we make someone else beat us. Problem is, PJ Tucker and Clint Capella beat them.
Yes, very, very handedly as well. And while people will look at it and be like, James Harden didn't go off against you in the first half, it worked. I don't buy into that logic whatsoever. I think James Harden realized they were just trapping him, so he got Clint Capella 11 shots at the rim, of 9 of which he hit. Like, when you're getting trapped and doubled and you're such a high-level, savant-level passer that James Harden is, you're just going to pick him apart in other ways. And that's exactly what he did in that first half. And then once they stopped trapping him as hard and they started dropping a little bit or just hedging flat out, when he got cooking, and then he just took over and handled that game, you know, without, you know, any worry at that point. So I don't think that anything they really did functioned at a level to where you can feel comfortable in any kind of playoff matchup.
No.
Well, that's my thing.
I'm never going to feel comfortable.
Yeah, but like, I'm not going to buy into any schematic change unless it's going to actually buy into a playoff atmosphere that you can at least function at some capacity in that atmosphere.
Yeah, I thought it was a good strategy. Obviously, it's not. You're right. James Harden is an exceptional passer, an exceptional ball handler in the pick and roll. There's a reason why other teams don't just trap him, because he does this. But here's what I bought into. If you're going to lose to the Houston Rockets, you know what? Make it PJ Tucker. Make it Clint Capella. Make those guys beat you instead of James Harden, because James Harden will beat you.
But so has Clint Capella, and so has PJ Tucker. PJ Tucker's probably shooting 55% from three against Denver. Like, he got off 11 threes in this game. He hit 7 of them. Then Gerald Green only took 3-point shots. He was 6 of 10 from three in this game. Like, the reason that these guys are hitting these shots are because they are wide open. Because of the way that Denver is playing defense against them, I just don't think it matches up.
But I thought, all right, the shots were wide open, but I don't know if that was necessarily a result of the strategy versus, like, the execution was horrific.
It was, you're right.
The stunts on Capella were late. They were after he got the ball. There's nothing Gary and Jamal can do after Clint Capella has the ball in his hands. And then in terms of those rotations, when the pass was swung to the corner, it was either no guys running, two guys running after the same guy, both coming late, fouling jump shooters. So the strategy in theory, TJ, because you're probably going to lose to the Rockets.
Yes.
But I think you go, okay, let's make PJ Tucker hit those. He will, but let's make PJ Tucker hit those shots, because we already know that Harden will.
And on paper, you're completely right. Completely correct. And if the way I look at it, I guess, is that there's no margin of error. Zero. They have to play to perfection to even have a shot at defending Houston, just because the personnel matchup isn't there. But you are right. If they can get it perfect, if they can make the rotations perfectly on time, not come too far down into the paint off of three-point shooters, be close enough to close out, and keep everything right in that sweet spot, sure, maybe they do have that opportunity. I just don't buy into that opportunity yet.
It's worth pointing out, though, for as horribly as things seem to go for the first three quarters, that was a game in the fourth. Denver never rolled over, and you know there was about a 5 to 6 minute stretch of gameplay where that lead was stuck at 10. Maybe they could get it down to 8, but they couldn't, you know?
Yeah.
They finally had a chance, I think, around the 6 minute mark. Amonte had the ball on a fast break, and he'd been great in that game. He'd made zero mistakes up to that point. But I believe that this layup would have cut it to about 6, maybe 4 points at that point in the game. And Monte makes his first mistake of the game. It's like that fadeaway layup on Harden, and he bricks. And I just felt like there were a couple possessions in that minute, 2 minute bit there where, okay, Denver has a chance to turn the corner, and they took their worst shots of the game. Yep. And if Malone had any hair left, I think he would have been.
You're probably not wrong about that. And there wasn't enough left in that starting group beyond Nikola Jokic to get the job done. Their starters got eviscerated in this game.
And also, that was the next point I was going to make. Where was Nikola Jokic? Michael Malone didn't bring him in until about
About that too, actually. I included that in the stuff that I was writing. Like, there was a point, I think it was the 7:37 mark. It was a 9-point game after Jamal Murray hit 2 free throws. So Nikola Jokic, from that point, did not come back into the game. They then went on a 4-0 run. The lead went straight back to 13, and that was pretty much ball game. I still think Michael Malone should have put Nikola in at that 7:30 mark.
No doubt.
Because then he could have taken that lead from 9 down to 6, maybe 5, maybe 4, and then you're right there.
I think the second that you're under the 10-minute mark in the fourth, and that lead gets under 10, Jokic has to be at the table.
And he hasn't been all year. Michael Malone has made a point of bringing him in at the 6-minute mark in that fourth quarter, even no matter how much he changes his rotations in the first and third quarter. In the fourth quarter, he's almost always in there at the 6:30 mark. Almost all, you know, it's repetition for him at this point now.
And I think Malone is as hard to criticize as any coach in the league this season. But I thought that was a mistake. I thought you had a chance to win a game on the road in Houston.
Yeah.
And you just put your best player in. Because if you win that game, it depends on how much you believe in things like momentum and signature wins. But that was the last test Denver really needs to pass before the playoffs is Houston. And I thought they had a chance and he let it go. Now, in his defense,
yes,
and we'll move on to the Miami game, it was a back-to-back on the road, and Jokic was fresh.
Yes.
And Jokic had himself a game.
Yes, he did. And not only did he have himself a game, he played the most minutes of anybody in this game. On the second night of a back-to-back, completely controlled the offense, played with tons of energy on defense, and was putting guys in great positions. This was almost a flawless Nikola Jokic game, in my opinion, considering how aggressive he was. He missed some bunnies at the rim, but this dude was on fire in this game.
Before we just laud him,
I'm going to have some rants in this one, I have a feeling.
One constructive bit of criticism, he really struggled with Whiteside and Bam in terms of the athleticism.
Yeah.
There were just some lobs and some plays where you go, all right, that is the limit of Jokic as a defender. He can do all this work to become a better system defender, and he has. But at the end of the day, often the guys lining up across from him at the center position are freak athletes. Jokic a little less so.
I mean, but nobody on Miami's roster scored more than 15 points. Hassan only had 12.
No, yeah. It's
so, like, I agree that he didn't handle him well, but he was still productive. Like, this was still an overall good defensive game from Denver, I thought. It wasn't great, and there were a lot of open miss shots by Miami, but, man, Denver was, they were at least giving tons and tons of effort, and in the first half, it was weird. The first quarter, Denver had tons of energy. In the second, they did not. There was just a complete disparity, and that's why you saw Denver have all the paint points, all the second chance points, all the fast break points in the first quarter, and then get beaten in all three of those categories in the second. In the third and fourth, Denver did not turn it off, right. And that's why they won this game. Their defense turned up.
Well, they held them below 100 points. It was a great defensive game, and Miami's been playing well lately.
Yes, they have.
That was a sneaky, really good win. Especially considering the nature of the loss just the night before, deflating type of loss, Houston gets you again. Now you're on the road. Now you got to fly to Miami and play the next night.
They didn't get until 4 a.m. in Miami.
I think, and you know, maybe these sort of last year versus this year takes are exhausted at this point. But I last year they fold, I think, in a game like
yeah,
that.
Yeah, no, absolutely.
And they did the opposite of fold.
And it wasn't just that. It was their star player who stepped up and refused to quit. Mm. Like, there were a lot of players. Torrey Craig was just relentless in this game. That dude was the embodiment of the Energizer Bunny in this game. But Nikola Jokic just refused to quit. Whenever they would hit a big three, like Dion Waiters would hit some ridiculous contested three from the wing that was just, you would think it would be demoralizing. Nikola Jokic would come down, get a post up, get fouled, hit a bucket, find a shooter. It was just methodical. It was conscious. And he always had a grip on this game, and he did not let go of it, and he carried the Nuggets to this win. They embodied Nikola Jokic tonight in this game, in my opinion.
And down the stretch, it looked like he looked confident and he looked eager to make a difference.
Yeah.
Any way he can, even if that was as a scorer, and of course he hits what goes on to be the game winner.
Yes.
The most Jokic game winner.
I know. He even said it too. I love floated because I can't dunk after the game. Like, it is the most Jokic thing possible.
We've got a league full of Anthony Davises, full of Giannis's, LeBron's, and this is our guy.
Jokic hit a step back floater in this game. Like, that's what he's doing with floaters now. He's finding new inventive ways to unleash his floater game upon all opponents who stand in his path, and it's amazing. And that was good defense by Bam Adebayo.
Hell
like
yeah.
That was a very, very difficult shot. You could not defend that better than Bam Adebayo did, but man, Nikola was just right there handling business, man. Like, that was incredible.
But in true Nikola fashion, he still flopped for the foul call.
I know, and they got upset about it a little bit.
And the high arcing floater, a mortar shell. No, yes. He was incredible. 20th triple-double of his career?
20th triple-double of his career. And what's crazy, I think he has 8 games this year where he was either 1 rebound, 1 point, or 1 assist shy of a triple-double. So, like, he could have 9 this year, potentially.
And that, the only other centers to have 20 or more, Kareem and Wilt, no?
I believe that's correct. And going back to even last year, he's already had this record. There's no European player, or any foreign player ever to have as many triple-doubles as Nikola already has.
Wow, that's incredible.
Like, it's unbelievable what he's done.
Saw this note from Chris Marlowe, the Nuggets are now 13-0 in Nikola's last 13 triple-doubles.
Jeez.
Which is, I mean, generally when your best player has a good game, you've got a chance to win games. But yeah, he's been incredible. I like Jamal's energy in the first quarter, especially for all the reasons we talked about with the Houston game and all the ways they could have been deflated. Jamal really, like 3 dunks in a row in the opening 2 minutes.
Yeah, he had 2 poster dunks in that game.
Good energy. The defense was really tough.
Yeah, Jamal has not been a good defender recently. Like, if I'm going to point to one reason why Denver's defense has fallen off in the month of December, yes, it's of course because they lost their 2 best defenders in Paul Millsap and Gary Harris. But when you also add in Jamal Murray just completely not playing defense at this point, like, he'll give some effort. I'm not saying that he is not giving effort. He's not completely bailing on it. But as an effective defender, he has not been that.
And it's not just the stuff we talked about in that Houston game and making decisions and rotations. In this Miami game, it was blowbys.
Yeah.
Blowbys.
It was just one-on-one getting destroyed.
And look, man, it's the NBA. The whole point of getting to this level of competition is that guys aren't supposed to be able to just do that.
Yeah.
Giannis.
So, in his defense, and I'm not one, like, everyone knows that I'm a little bit harder on Jamal Murray than most. I just don't quite see the star level as everybody else. I think I see the ceiling the same. I just don't see him being on the path where some others do. He had to deal with Justice Winslow starting at point guard, who is one of the strongest dudes in the NBA, and he's basically a power forward clone.
For sure.
playing point guard. And when it wasn't him, it's Josh Richardson and Tyler Johnson, who are both 6'4", 220, get in your face, slash. These are as physical of guards as you're going to play against, so I will give him that at least.
Sure, but it's been a problem all year. And Dwayne, there were some Dwayne Wade blowbys.
Dwayne Wade, yeah, abused him a little bit, for sure.
Almost 40, so, you know.
I love watching Wade play. By the way, how funny was it that Isaiah Thomas and him were the two that traded? I thought it was great.
Well, everyone else on the Nuggets.
Wondering if Gary Harris would have been the one if he wasn't hurt.
They're like 23 years old.
They've never even seen him play. Yeah, actually,
he doesn't know any of them. Yeah, that's IT's great contribution to the season so far. Jersey swap with David. By the way, I just wanted to point that out about Jamal, because sometimes I think we come on these podcasts and we just cheerlead, and you know. I'm really high on Jamal, but the defense has been bad.
Was that a podcast subtweet of your host, Adam Mares?
No.
I'm just kidding.
No, that was me acknowledging all of the not-so-subtle subtweets in our direction. No, but, you know, really, really, really strong win given the way things went in Houston. Did you have any other notes from this?
Thinking of players who struggled a lot recently and finally came back and had a strong game, in my opinion, was Trey Lyles.
Dude, that's you. Yeah.
Trey Lyles, like, he has had a rough year to the point where people just want him to be out of the rotation, and when they get healthy, probably justifiably so. But he came out, and in that third quarter, Denver had no energy at one point. They were struggling. It looked like they were in the danger zone and like James Harden was about to take over. And Trey Lyles had like three straight buckets and had some big time rebounds, and it was like he elevated them at their lowest point in this game, and they don't win this game without him.
I'm not ready to, and I'm not going to sit here and talk myself back into Trey Lyles. I think we've learned.
I'm not either. But with you on that.
But just from the standpoint of rooting for a dude personally, he hit a big three in the fourth.
Yeah.
And you know that look that basketball players have on their face, like when it's a big moment, and they're just, you know what I mean? They're just ready to go. He had that. Yeah. He was like, oh, we're hooping again. You know? And so I was happy for him in that regard. He was great in that game.
And it's funny because like we've always said, if his three-point shot falls, everything else comes. And he comes out and hits three of his five shots, all of a sudden a 6 of 8 from the field, has 15 points in 15 minutes, and you're like, wow, there is a productive basketball player right there. Oh. If his three-point shot falls, he is a productive basketball player. The problem is...
It doesn't. I think we've learned that.
Yeah.
What happened in Millsap's absence?
History is not in his favor.
That was an outlier. That was an outlier. But, it was.
He was good, and they don't win this game without him. And we should talk about Torrey Craig in that same regard.
Well, I was going to. Yeah. So he probably Torrey's best game, right? I know I saw you.
I tweeted that out too. I think this was Torrey Craig's best game of his career.
4 offensive rebounds.
Six offensive rebounds, and they led to 8 total? Points.
How many total rebounds?
16.
Good lord.
So he had career highs in total rebounds, offensive rebounds, and defensive rebounds. This game,
the one he had on the free throw line rebounding, and he was boxed out, so he just stuck his hand in and volleyball punched it up and in. Incredible.
Yeah.
And he turned around and flexed on him.
My favorite part is after the game, they were like, did you hit their hand to hit the ball in? Did you hit the ball? And he was like, I have no idea. Like, he didn't know what transpired, but the ball fell in and he knew that he got that big bucket. That's all that he cared about. But no, 4 assists ties a career high. He was 1 minute away from his career high in minutes. He had a career high in defensive and offensive and total rebounds in this game, and a career high in 3 made three-pointers. This was Torrey Craig's best game of his career.
He's been shooting much better lately, and...
He just became a 40% three-point shooter for the past, like, month. Which, he's not a 40% three-point shooter.
Again,
he's not.
I'm going to give Torrey Craig some credit, but it also just speaks to, like, the Nikola Jokic MVP case. Like, he's turning Torrey 100%. Craig into Robert Covington.
Yeah, Malik Beasley was not able to play NBA basketball last year, and all of a sudden he is a full-blown, like, helpful rotation player.
For what
and
it's
he's
worth,
worked his ass off to... Oh, sorry, if that's... I bleeped that, potentially.
I don't know, but... It's not my podcast.
But Malik Beasley, for the credit he has worked very hard for, he is so much better with Nikola on the floor compared to not. Like, the disparity is very clear when you look at net rating. Like, Nikola just makes people significantly better, and he has done that with very fringe NBA rotation players as of the start of the season.
Yeah, no, and so Craig, look, man, I happen to think Craig's a little overrated as a defender.
Yeah, we've argued about this quite a bit.
I think the defense, like, look, at the end of the day, I have to acknowledge that on more than one occasion, he's done a nice job on the best offensive player on the other team. But I think it's like a raw defensive talent. Like, he gets turned around a lot.
He's just really long, really athletic, and really springy, and really cares about it.
He makes a lot of mistakes, man.
Yeah, he does.
And, like, it's a much looser defensive experience than it's described. Like, he's not a lockdown, but he gets the job done. He's been willing and able to guard guys that no one else could. And if he's going to hit threes like this, and you go, you know, you get questions like, okay, Malone's going with Craig again. I thought we learned it should be Wancho. Well, look, Wancho's not shooting well and Craig is.
Yeah.
And so it's not surprising to see him
go. I have a question for you. Torrey Craig, where does he rank in terms of defender on this Nuggets roster?
Oh, good question. You put me on the spot. Probably like
it's not your podcast, so I can do this.
Like
too.
Third or fourth, probably. But yeah.
He's right there with Mason Plumlee, I think.
Kind of like a by default thing. I would say Mason Plumlee is a better defender.
So he's probably 4 then, right? Yeah. But even then, like he's probably what their second best wing defender then at that point. Like the value that he adds, even if he's not elite at it yet, is still very important to
this
team.
He is.
That's the point that I'm trying to make here.
He's a body type that they don't have.
Yes.
Right?
Ultra athletic, long
guard, but long can actually guard. Wings.
Michael Malone said after the game, he was like, I think he defended every single player that played for the Heat tonight. And I think that that's true. Like, he was everywhere, switching everything, but he played very, very well in this game.
Yeah, he did. He's great. All All right, let's talk about Juancho, because Juancho barely played.
And yeah, did you see the Nick Hosmeyer report before the game?
That he's dealing with some injuries?
So, yeah, so Michael Malone said that he was dealing with a few injuries. I don't know what that means. It was very vague. And also fatigue, which is what I think this really is. Because let's think back to last year. Juancho did not play because he was sick all last year.
I'll just cut you off and say right now, I'm not buying the injuries thing.
I'm not either. I think he's just really, really tired. I think
he's just struggling.
Because he's never played this kind of minutes in his life before.
Yeah. And he had mono last year.
Yeah.
But there's been a lot of, like... Given all of those things, I can see why Malone might feel the need to, I guess, protect him a little bit, right? And he hasn't been playing him as much lately, and so yeah. I think he wants to maybe try to mitigate or temper, contain some of that, are they giving up on Juancho conversation?
Oh, that's not a conversation, if you ask
me. Well, but here's the question now. Given how well Torrey Craig's playing, Will Barton, who we'll talk about in a second, maybe, supposedly, theoretically, will come back and play basketball one day. When he does... Both Juancho and Craig, are they playing with the bench? Are you making a decision between Juancho and Craig?
Yeah, depending on... So if you're going to play Isaiah Thomas, this becomes even tougher. But if we're going to remove that part from the conversation, I think that you're going to play two of them. Or you're going to eliminate Trey Lyles completely and play all three. But one of them is only going to play 10 minutes a night kind of
right,
thing.
Right. It's interesting, man, because Juancho... Here's, I think, the best defense of Juancho right now. Even when he's not shooting well, he can still... positively affect space.
Well, the gravity is still there.
Is still there because guys know it. They know he can shoot well, but also Juancho is an excellent relocator.
Yes.
He moves off ball way better than most guys who are like kind of just shoved in the corner yeah. and asked to
And
do
let
it.
Me channel my inner Adam Adams here because the second like Nikola Jokic strikes as a passer when he's at his best, when he gets defenders leaning. And when Juancho relocates from the paint to the three-point line, he makes defenders lean away from the paint. And when that kind of stuff happens, it allows Nikola Jokic to continue to do what he does best because he has somebody that is willing to be a complete off-ball mover that has enough gravity to at least pull guys in different directions. And when he gets somebody who can do that, he can hit other cutters for layups and things like that because defenders are on either leg, they're not planted, they're not in a stance like that because they're leaning.
Right.
So I think that's important. And also, sorry.
No, shoot.
Going back to the fatigue thing, Juancho's rookie year, the entire season, played 62 games, only played 842 minutes. Played 277 minutes last year. This year, already in 38 games, he's at 1,008 minutes.
Oh, wow.
That's the fatigue that I was talking about that I think is probably bothering because it's been years since he's played this kind of role.
Right.
So it's going to catch up with you at some point. But no, I think Juancho is just out of the rotation to get a rest. I don't think Malik starts again unless Juancho is going to actually be dealing with injuries.
Did you get the sense, though, that when Juancho is playing, that he looks tentative? Like he's trying not to make mistakes, trying not to get himself benched?
I think his shot stopped falling because he was so tired, and then he stopped shooting.
Right.
You can call that tentative. That's absolutely a justifiable adjective for this, but I don't think that it's necessarily he's tentative. He doesn't trust his shot. The confidence isn't there because he's so tired that he can't get enough lift under it.
Right. But just, you know, food for thought, it's some of the other stuff he's good at. I don't think Craig is good at all.
I mean,
like the cutting and the just sort of anything you can do off ball to help spacing, which, again, there's more to spacing than shooting ability. And I don't know if Craig has necessarily learned the ways to optimize himself in those ways. All of this is to say,
yeah,
he's been really good lately.
Yes.
And he should be playing the minutes he's playing.
If you had to pick between Torrey Craig, Malik Beasley, and Juancho Hernangómez, basically rank them for who you would re-sign first. Like, who's more valuable to you?
Here's the thing.
I like this game because it spells out what's important to the Nuggets, I think.
Right. That's where it gets interesting.
It's not about which player is better. It's about who fits better with this team.
And that's why, that for me is why I'm not ready to put Juancho like last.
Mm-hmm.
Because I think
I'd have Juancho first.
He's a Jokic piece.
Yes.
He's a Jokic player.
Yes.
And I think that matters.
And if he gets even, you know, if he mentally is 20% better defensively, he can be a good defender. Like he has the skills to be a 60th percentile defender, you know, a little bit above average.
He just sometimes he is. You know,
he's mentally not there. He isn't learning.
You know the kid in left field in Little League who's just picking up the
That's
draft.
How he, that's a very good describer for his defense.
He's like, oh shit. Oh, shoot.
we got bleeps to add into this one.
Shouts to Adam, sponsors.
Love you, man.
All right, let's move on. General notes not related to the results of those games.
Okay.
Gary Harris, I haven't been around the team lately. You have a little more than me. You have any updates?
Nobody does. They're just still waiting. I haven't even found out if he's getting an MRI or not. Like, we're just kind of in wait and see mode. He is, I think it's a good indicator that he has not been listed as anything but questionable a day before games. So, like, every moment that they, like, you know, he's been declared out before the Heat game, of course, but at every other opportunity for an injury report to come out, he has been questionable. And I think that's an important distinction to make here, because that is a good sign. They're not just immediately saying, no, we're not playing him for a little while.
It really could just be, what I gathered from Malone's post-game comments was that there's not necessarily an injury. He just pulled a hammer, like, he
but there's
tweaked
some concern.
A hamstring, and hammies are, there's just because the player says, I feel good, I can go, doesn't mean he should go.
Yeah.
And at this point, take your time, get healthy.
Yeah.
Are you worried, TJ? It might be a little too early to have this conversation.
It's not too early. I wrote about this, too.
Is Gary Harris an injury-prone
player?
Gary
Harris, as of right now, as history has shown, is an injury-prone player.
Yeah.
And it sucks. He's only had 1 year where he's played over 65 games. Like, it just is what it is. Like, it's so unfortunate, and I don't know what it is.
He plays very physically.
And beyond that, so I go back and I think about Terrence Ross. There was a point where he added like 25 pounds of muscle, and he had to lose that muscle because of the way that he plays, the springy nature of his game, the amount of threes that he takes, the amount of lift that he needs. He couldn't have that amount of weight on his body. And I wonder if Gary Harris is getting stronger and stronger and stronger, as he should, because that is an important thing for his development defensively, to be able to check small forward as being strong. I do wonder if the extra weight has bothered him, because the reason that I'm willing to say he is probably on the path to being labeled injury prone is because they're all lower body injuries.
Right.
Every single one. It's groin, it's foot, it's ankle, it's hip, it's, you know, now it's hamstring. Every single thing has been a lower body injury. And while Gary Harris should not be completely labeled injury prone yet, it's not unfair to say that anymore.
It's time to wonder.
Yeah, it's time for it to be a conversation like this for sure. And it sucks because Gary Harris has done nothing but work as hard as he can to be the best player that he can be.
Would you trade Gary Harris? I'm just kidding. all right, running out of time. Let's move on. Defense has slipped big time.
Yes.
This is an extended slip now, but it also coincides with some of their best defensive players getting hurt.
Yes.
How worried are you? And worried from this context, I don't think they were ever a top five defense, right?
I agree with that.
So league average, 10 to 15, 10 to 16.
Oh, I'm completely thinking they're going to be a 15 or better defense.
A healthy Nuggets team.
Yes.
I agree.
Completely there. And even if they stay a little bit banged up here and there, I think they'll still stay within that realm.
And it does seem like they finally figured out the offensive thing now, to where they don't necessarily need to be the best defensive team in the league. They're winning games.
And in addition to that, they're still playing with tons of effort defensively. This isn't a thing where they're like bailing on it just to play offensive basketball anymore like they did last year. That is not the case right now.
And you know, you think about the rate at which they allow looks at the rim and threes, you could argue that, like, maybe it's not that they're doing anything differently so much as opponent shots are just falling.
And, like, there have been articles written where Wes Unseld has talked about how they understood that when they built this defense, they were going to give up some level of open threes because they're going to have to scramble so much, but they felt like the trade-off was going to be enough for the containment that they provide and allowing Nikola Jokic to feel comfortable in his role. So they knew what they were going to get into with this.
And another factor, I think, in the defensive slip is also, like, so much of this is what Murray and Jokic are doing in pick and roll defense. And over these last few weeks, month, they've been asked to carry a bigger offensive load than ever.
Yes.
So put frankly, it's just asking too much.
Yeah.
You know, for them to be still.
And like, let's be honest here. Nikola Jokic is not in NBA shape. And he's never been in NBA shape because he is not, like, he just isn't in NBA shape.
He isn't in shape.
He is a shape. Like, it is, and it's okay because Nikola Jokic is going to take years to get to where he needs to be in his body. Marc Gasol took 6 years to get there, and that's not because he was lazy. It was because it just takes time.
I don't think he's ever going to get there.
And maybe he does, maybe he doesn't. It's
you
not
know
for
what?
Us to
I'm
say
past
yet.
It. This is still what Jokic is.
Yeah.
So if he does and he shows up one day, great. Here's a hot take. Don't ever start working out. Don't get too muscular. Who never gets hurt? Jokic.
Yeah. Oh, you're 100% right.
Who doesn't play basketball?
Gary Harris
Russell
jumps
Westbrook.
Too violently, so we have to worry about lower body injuries. Nikola Jokic can't jump, so we don't have to worry about those
he
things.
He barely accelerates.
Oh, no.
Chucking floaters up.
Nikola Jokic could probably play until he was 43 years old in the NBA if he wanted to, with the touch he has around the rim and his passing ability and the fact that he never gets hurt. Like, he already plays like the old guy at the YMCA who's more talented than you.
He's got like 11 career dunks. Okay. we'll go quick here. Two more questions. Barton. So I want to acknowledge this because I think all of us, whether at Stiffs or Mile High Sports or whatever, we have been wrong about the injury stuff. But so we should But for what it's worth, these are direct turnarounds of the information that we're getting from the team. These are things Malone's are saying in scrums. So the initial projection for Barton was 6-8.
Yeah, we're at what, 12 now?
Yeah, and when we got to that seven range, everyone else was hurt. And Malone made it very clear that it was his belief, his opinion, that Barton would be back first. So I put that out there.
We all did, right? I did, for sure.
So own up to that. But also, all of that is to ask you this. Do you think there was a setback, or do you think it's taking longer than they expected?
I don't think it's either.
A semantic splitting of hair? Like,
I don't think it's semantic splitting the hairs. I think it is two separate entities. But from, I haven't written about this and I haven't really talked about it because I haven't really gotten a great sense of it. But what I do understand is that he's never had a major injury before. Mentally, you have to be ready to come back.
Right.
Like, Will Barton, from what he told me, I was talking about this at one point, and he told me he's never been hurt for more than 2 weeks in his basketball life, flat out. Since he was 8 years old playing Little League stuff as a kid, he's never been out of basketball for more than 2 weeks.
Right.
Never had surgery on anything in his life. No tonsils out, nothing. Like, has never been under the knife. And all of a sudden, now he's playing, you know, he's coming back into a team that's already playing well, and he's taken his time, and I would be nervous too. And I don't know if that's the case. There's a lot to, you know, figure out there, but none of us have heard about a setback, right? And they would tell us in a press release that there was a clear setback.
Right. And so,
for me, there's not a setback that I'm willing to go with.
Right.
Yet.
So if you're sitting at home for now, it does not appear like Barton re-injured himself. There was a setback or anything like that. It's just taking longer.
Taking longer than they expected. And he just wants to get mentally ready to come back.
Okay. Final question for you. We've argued about this in the past. Things have changed. Time has passed. TJ, yes or no, right now, gun to your head, coach of the year, Michael Malone.
Yes.
Agreed.
Oh, it's not even a close conversation right now for me.
Because the other guy,
he is head and shoulders above the other competition right now.
I think. Congrats to Bud to figuring out that you should put shooters around Giannis.
You know, hats off to Nick Nurse for getting Kawhi Leonard on already the number one seed in the Eastern Conference.
And I'm not like they're doing great jobs, but what body of work stands out more than what Malone's done?
And it's not only that, it's that they were handed good hands. Michael Malone was handed a 15 in blackjack and has turned it into a win so far.
Nice.
Like, you got to do what you got to do at this point. And Michael Malone has had more injuries than any other team in the NBA for total games missed. The second youngest roster in the league. They had two disabled player exceptions at one point, and they are still the number one seed in the Western Conference. They are three losses up on Oklahoma City and two losses up on Golden State. They have the best record against Western Conference team. They're the only team left undefeated in their division. I think they're only one of two or three teams in the Western Conference with a winning road record. Like, at some point, the resume speaks for itself, and he just is the coach of the year right now.
Agreed. Man, all this Nuggets talk, I'm excited. We're heading back to the arena tomorrow.
About time. It feels like it's been a little while for some reason.
Yeah, it does.
It hasn't, but for you it has, actually.
Yeah, no, it does feel like it's been a while. No, I'm excited to get back in there. I'm also excited to plug and to attend the Denver Stiffs Denver Nuggets watch party on Saturday. It is at the Cherry Cricket on Blake Street. Special guest Alex English. Sorry, special guest.
By the way, he is very excited about this.
Oh, he's all over Twitter. He should be excited. If you went to the opening night one, you know, it was a banger. I know I'm biased.
I was there. It was wonderful. I'm a competitor. We're not even on the same team, and that was wonderful.
So stop by to hang out with the Stiffs, hang out with fellow Nuggets fans. We got drink deals, prizes, games, and of course, Nuggets legend Alex English is in the building. Why would you not go? So Cherry Cricket, I'll be there 5:30, 6:00. I recommend getting there early so you have a seat. Last time it was packed.
It was wild last time.
So definitely please check that out. Please come. I mean, these are the best things that we do at Stiffs, in my opinion. It's the most fun, and being able to interact with the community, the fans like this, is my favorite part of the whole game.
It's so cool. Every kind of person, old, young, every single kind of person shows up. It's just Nuggets fans, man. It's a great time. I love going to those events.
All right, so hopefully we'll see you Saturday. I will talk to you all tomorrow. Again, Adam's off for the rest of the week. Sorry, you're stuck with me. I am also disappointed that I'm not Adam Mares, but it is what it is. All right, we will talk to you guys tomorrow. Enjoy the rest of your evening or day or it's a podcast.
Enjoy whatever time of day that you are enjoying currently.
Go Nuggets.
Thank you for listening to the Locked On Nuggets podcast. Be sure to subscribe on iTunes and visit us on the web at denverstiffs.com.